irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Listen Up with Jim Potts, only on LA Talk Radio.
Jim Potts back on the air, and as always, thank you so much for listening to me on your Sunday evening or your late afternoon, whatever the case may be. I do always appreciate it. Today we're going to be talking about a number of things, but it's all going to be surrounding around gangs, etc. But before we do that, I want to let you know that we are streaming live today. Go to latalkradio.com. That's latalkradio.com, and go to the Facebook page. So latalkradio.com. Facebook page. All right. Then you'll see us streaming live today. So you get a chance to look at my handsome face today. But not only my handsome face, I got a special guest today. I have my son Jamal that's on today, and he will be my my guest. We'll be talking about a number of things, including peer pressures and things of that nature regarding the gangs, the situation with gangs out there as well. So we'll go through all of that. Jamal will be giving his input with me as well. All right. Jamal's got a security background, and he also works with me on my domestic terrorism projects that I do on behalf of businesses as well. So, okay, having said that, Jamal, welcome to the show, first of all.
Good afternoon. Thank you.
You know, so happy to have you here today. Okay, what we're going to do right now is, always, I like to do my shout-outs first and then my emails as well. First of all, I want to send a shout-out to Sandy Hook Elementary School shooting. Very soon will be their anniversary. I'm also putting that in because there's a couple of things that have transpired within the last week that has to do with Sandy Hook. So I want to kind of remind you about Sandy Hook, for those of you who don't remember. I know you'll know the name Sandy Hook. It came up in it was a Connecticut situation. It was a 20-year-old. Adam Lanza was his name. He actually shot and killed 26 people. It was 20 students and six adults that he killed at that time. This incident actually remains one of the deadliest mass shootings at either a primary or secondary school in the United States, and it's the second deadliest United States school shooting overall. So, you know, please keep these people in mind. They're going through a lot because the anniversary always brings these things back, so to speak. All right? Now, the other thing I wanted to send a shout-out to, unfortunately, we had another school shooting this week. So as you see, this ties in with the Sandy Hook situation. You know, it's always sad when we hear about these things. We've got a situation where Saugus High School in California, some of you, you know, that are on the East Coast, may not have gotten the information. I'm not sure. But I always like to speak to those issues as well. This past Friday, we had a situation where a 16 years old, goes to his high school. His mother drops him off. And right after she drops him off, he walks on campus, drops his backpack, takes out a .45 caliber handgun, and shoots and kills two students. One was 16, one was 14, male and a female, and wounds three other students. And he ended up turning the gun on himself as well. He's 16 years old. His shooting spree, 16 seconds. So that was kind of ironic in terms of the time frame. When the police went to his home, they found that he had six other handguns there. So, again, here we go with that. You know, the fact that there's handguns in the home, he had access to it. Tragic, to say the least. And, again, we have no reason as to why he did these things. So, very sad, to say the least. Okay, so we want to send out a shout-out to the victims and their families. So, hopefully, the ones that are still in the hospital will have a speedy recovery. And hopefully they'll be home soon. Okay. Before I get too far into this as well, if you have any questions today, give us a call, 818-602-4929, 818-602-4929, or you can send me an email, as so many people do, at listenupwithjp@pottsandassociates.com. pottsandassociates.com. And if you want to get on my email list for the blog so you get the topics every week, you can also send us a text message. Just text Potts Associates and text that to 22828 and enter your email address, and we'll add you to the weekly announcements. Okay, right now we're going to read off these first emails here. So here's the first one today. Hi, Jim. I recently read where the Supreme Court is permitting a lawsuit filed by families of the Sandy Hook victims. So once again, you can see why I'm tying this all in today, to move forward against Remington, the maker of the weapon used by the shooter. That seems outrageous to me. What happens if they win against Remington? That means every gun manufacturer can be responsible when someone else uses their gun to kill. What are your thoughts on this? And it's signed by Walter. Look, Walter, it's true. But I want the listeners to also understand, because I don't think that the news sometimes fully explains some of this. So let me just tell the listeners that the Supreme Court is not making a decision as to whether Remington is right or wrong. So let's start with that. The Supreme Court is just simply saying that the suit can move forward, because when Remington got sued, Remington appealed the fact that they could be sued because there's some longstanding case law out there that says manufacturers cannot be held liable. So it's only that the case gets to move forward. Now, understand, because of the fact that there's some longstanding cases on this, is what will happen is that, let's just say Remington loses, all right, and Remington appeals to the Supreme Court. Well, the Supreme Court could reverse against the lower court's decision or the appellate court, against any decision against Remington. Now, I want to clarify that, Walter. Now, the other thing is, you're asking me my opinion. My opinion is I don't believe that manufacturers should be held liable. Because if you open up that door, what about handguns? What about knives? What about, what about people when they drive cars and things of that nature? So I don't know. I got a guest today. I got my son here, Jamal. Jamal, what do you think? What's your opinion?
That's opening up a can of worms, if you ask me. I don't think you should hold a manufacturing company liable for somebody using something that, other than the purpose that it was meant to be. If you have a, rifles are, made for hunting and things like that, but if somebody uses it for something other than its intended purposes, I don't think you should hold Remington liable. I think the best thing to do, honestly, you got to do a little bit of investigation in terms of, one, who owned the handgun. You got to blame the people that's responsible for pulling the trigger and committing these crimes. Then, two, you can say blame the parents, but at the same time, did they get the gun from the parents, or did they get the gun from another source? So there's always moving pieces involved in things like this, in my opinion. So homework got to be done. If the parents own the weapon and the kid got a hold of that weapon, by all means, I think that parent should be held responsible for it, but not keeping that stored safely away.
So you would slant more toward parental responsibility, but let's just say for a moment that it's not a parent. A juvenile, because now is what you're also talking about is possibly an adult. That couldn't, because this is Sandy Hook. So the Sandy Hook, so we know that it was another, it was a juvenile that actually did the shooting. All right. And I, I'm trying to remember if he was 20 years old or not. I'm trying to remember right now about his approximate age. But let's just say for a moment that he was older. He was not a juvenile. And now they're suing. See, the problem with some of this, in my opinion, is the shooters normally get killed or kill themselves. So people always want to be able to have the issue addressed. So the realities are, if I can't sue him because he's gone, okay, what's the next best thing? So I think people look at it that way also. But I thought you raised a good point when you mentioned about the facts, because the facts, we don't know all the facts. So letting it proceed to go to court, as an example, will at least give everybody an opportunity to draw out all the facts that we don't have. But juries get to hear all of the facts.
Right.
Is it something Remington can do? I mean, who knows? Okay. Like I said, in my opinion, I don't think Remington should be held, responsible. This was an automatic weapon. But besides automatic weapons, look what we're talking about with the Saugus High School shooting the other day. It was not an automatic weapon. It was a handgun. So that, to me, separates things out. What do you think?
I think people put too much emphasis on assault rifles. I don't think, personally, me, military grade rifles shouldn't be allowed in the homes and stuff like that. I think that, but that's an extreme case. Unfortunately, assault rifles do get blamed for a lot of things, but a handgun could be just as effective. I mean, if you're talking about shooting the kids, and I'm just saying in the events that happen, you know, shooting at a group of people that's in a hallway in a congested area, well, it doesn't take long to let off 10 gunshots or 15 and reload and let off another clip. So, you know, I know a lot of people want to try to ban guns. I don't think that's the answer at all, because I think people will definitely find a way to get a hold of something when they want to do something. And unfortunately, we're living in a time period when people are mad. They're going to try to figure out how to do what they want to do. And that's the unfortunate, sad part about this.
Well, this lawsuit's been bouncing around since 2014. And just to be clear, everybody, it wasn't everybody that was a victim of this is bringing this lawsuit. There's 9 family members whose child was killed, and then there's 1 survivor. So it's really 10 people that's bringing this lawsuit, which I'm sure to them it's important. They're looking for closure. So we'll just wait and see what happens. It'll be one step at a time. But I think we all agree that these are sad situations, without a doubt. Okay, let's take a look at the second email that we got today. All right. Hi, Jim. My son told me about a man who was stabbed to death at a Popeye's chicken location over a sandwich. This is exactly what you spoke about at a training I attended recently. Never assume you know something about someone you do not know. An argument with a stranger that has now cost a man his life over something so ridiculous. You're right. It's best to simply walk away and swallow that ego. Just sharing a thought. Paul from Minneapolis, Minnesota. Well, Paul, it's true. And I don't know if everybody knows about this. I know Jamal and I have talked about this business, about this Popeye chicken sandwich. Apparently, there's some craze going on right now about Popeye's chicken, where they're competing with Chick-fil-A or something, and here's this sandwich, and the lines are long. But I just to fill in the listeners that may not have heard about this, the man was fatally stabbed. That's what happened. Was apparently, this individual cut the line, okay? So moments after cutting a line for customers ordering the new sandwich, the victim was stabbed in the upper body. So what happened was, he gets into this, there's a line-cutting situation, and he and the guy go outside. So both guys go outside, and one guy pulls out a knife and stabs the guy to death over a chicken sandwich. Now, you know, they didn't know each other before, and that's the sad part once again, a complete stranger. I tell people in the active shooter training that we're doing all the time, don't make an assumption about people you don't know. We don't know what people out there are capable of doing anymore. So don't get into these arguments with people, these senseless arguments. The road rage thing is another example of it. But don't get into these senseless arguments with people because you don't know what they're capable of doing. You don't know if there's mental illness there. You don't know if there's drugs involved. You don't know any of those things. It's a stranger. Just walk away. Forget about it. It's simply not worth it. And here's a man that loses his life over a business about cutting a line and a sandwich. So the individual has not been caught yet, but his picture is out there. It's on the internet. So they're looking for him without a doubt. The girlfriend of the individual, you know, they're looking for her too and questioning. She didn't do anything. But they're looking for her to question her in terms of who the individual was. Jamal, I don't know, Jamal, what do you think? I mean, this is about a sandwich.
Personally, me, I've had that chicken sandwich, and I can't say it's that great. I mean, it's good, you know what I mean?
Right.
But in terms of killing somebody over chicken sandwich because somebody cut you in line, look, if somebody cut you in line, the worst case scenario is you got to wait one person longer than you did before. It's not that serious. If somebody's that crazy, they're capable of doing anything. You know what I mean? Obviously, that chicken sandwich is more important to them than you. So just go and let them have the chicken sandwich.
And let it go.
And let it go.
I'm going to read this third email. This third email was actually sent a couple of weeks ago, but it was kind of on point on what we were talking about. And this was sent from Jim from New Jersey. And it was talking about, this email was talking about a gun owned by the parents. And Jim in his email says, if that kid used a gun owned by the parents, they should be held legally responsible, especially if the kid is a minor. Guns and ammunition have to be kept locked up in such a way as to make it impossible for a kid to get their hands on it. If people choose to own assault-style weapons, they have to make sure no one can use them for a mass shooting. Okay? So, with that in mind, I tied this one in, obviously, again, because now this past weekend, we had the Saugus shooting, and he was in a single-parent relationship. Their parents had been, I guess, divorced, and then the father passed away a couple of years ago. And I can only make the assumption that these handguns in the home were handguns left over from when his father, you know, his father was there, his father was alive or whatever. But it's true about the fact that, you know, they need to be locked up. So I tied this email back to that because under the circumstances of this high school situation from this past weekend. Okay. The those are the emails. Now is what we're going to turn our attention to. We got a very important subject to talk about today, and that has to do with gangs, how they're formed, things of that nature, why these kids, you know, can get into gangs and things, everything kind of associated with it. When Jamal was younger, we've had these kind of conversations as well. I mean, we had a home that was located in a nice neighborhood, but of course, you know, when you have teenage boys, you know, out there and they have friends associated with it, et cetera, these issues kind of come up. So it's one of the reasons why I asked Jamal to come on today as well, so we could talk about some of those things. But before we do that, let me just give the listeners a little background here, because I want you to understand something. Street gangs, look, they pose a significant threat to public safety in the United States for decades. It is not new, all right? And you've heard me on the show before talk about some of these things. That's not new. People always think that these things are, oh, this is more recent. It's just that. No, it's not. No, it's not. The lines of communication have changed where technology presents, gives us an opportunity. We're getting a call in, so hold on one second here. Hi, you're on the air with Jim Potts. Do you have a question or comment you'd like to share?
Yes.
Who am I talking to? You don't have to give your whole name. First name is fine.
Neil. This is Neil from Florida.
Neil from Florida. Go ahead, Neil. How are you today?
Jim, I'm well, thank you. I want to know, would it not be prudent for the federal government to be the one to regulate the sales of weapons? If you need to buy a weapon, instead of getting it from a dealer, why can it not be bought from a reputable federal source? Let's say you buy a weapon and you go pick it up from maybe a police station. At least that way you have more accountability and more traction as far as tracking where weapons go and who's handling these weapons. That's my question for you today.
Okay, well, let's just explore that. And I'll ask Jamal his opinion, give him a moment to think while I'm speaking. But here's the deal. Now we're talking about getting the government involved in. Well, first of all, let me just give you one feeling that I have. My first opinion, Neil, is that I don't even believe these weapons should even be out there. I think they should only be in the hands of either military or law enforcement. And I have actually touted that on the air more than one time. That's the first thing. The second thing is that once we get the government involved with these weapons, I'm telling you right now, you're going to have a whole lot of arguments flowing around out there regarding Second Amendment. The NRA is going to jump into the middle of it. It's going to be a mess. And now we'd be making the government possibly, you know, the seller of these weapons. Okay, once they start controlling them, now let's go back to what I mentioned earlier about the fact that if who can be held, you know, responsible. So let's just say that the government, okay, has a guy, all right, they do a background check on it, because I'm assuming part of this would be that if the government can control it, you're saying that they can also control and do a background check. Would that be a correct statement on the person?
Indeed.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay, so now they've done a background check on the person, and the person comes back clean, like the Las Vegas shooter. He had 67 weapons. 67. He came back clean, so he was able to buy those weapons. So let's say the government now turns around, issues the, permits the weapon to be picked up. They pick it up, and now that person who had no background issues before turns around and kills people. Now they're suing the federal government. And I don't know if the federal government even wants to get involved from that standpoint. I don't know. Jamal, what's your opinion?
My opinion is, I mean, there are already things in place where, you know, they have background checks. And, you know, I think they've gone through a great length to do these background checks to try their best to ensure. But you can never guarantee who's going to do what. And unfortunately, there are very few people out there. I know it's a lot of shootings that we see on TV and hear about and stuff like that. But there's more good people than bad. And so for the responsible people, I don't think it's fair for us responsible people to have our rights restricted and taken away from us. I don't agree with that at all, just because of, you know, a chosen few people's decisions. And the bottom line, at the end of the day, criminals will find a way to get their hands on guns. And it's not going to be right if the good guys can't defend themselves. And that's what we got to take into consideration. Just because other people don't agree with gun rights, and it doesn't mean you should take my right away. You know, so.
Well, you know, again, it brings up the point, you know, but Neil, I want to mention something else to you also. If you actually look at the mass shootings that have been out there, they're not with the assault rifles. There's more mass shootings with handguns, believe it or not, than they are with these rifles. So the percentages are going to be lower. It's just that it's more devastating when these people use these assault-type weapons. I think
that's point taken.
You know, so I think
indeed. I do agree with Jamal when Jamal said earlier that you know, he doesn't think that the assault weapons should be a home-based weapon. Myself, I don't believe this weapon should be in the hands of an everyday individual.
Right.
I think you can protect your home as well with a handgun instead of an assault rifle. You know, that's just one of the things. And the reason why I asked my initial question was the government already regulates, you know, weapons. So I was just kind of thinking that if they were the one that's checking, doing a background check on these sales, they know exactly where it's going to. They have more oversight. They have a better database that, you know, they can check to see if the person that they're selling a weapon to has got mental issues. So, you know, it's just one of those things. I know it's a sticky situation, but, you know, it's just one of those things that I thought about. Maybe the government can have bigger regulations over it.
Neil, here's part of the problem. It's a very slippery slope. And the reason why I'm saying that, the difference between what they call like an assault rifle and, let's say, a varmint rifle is very close. For example, you might have a gun like an AK-47, military assault rifle, but you can go out and buy a rancher's rifle like a Ruger Mini 30, which is the same caliber bullet as a AK-47. So now we're moving from taking assault rifles away, but wait a minute, they can use this too. So now we start taking that away. It's a never-ending slope. So to me, you have to be very, very careful when you when you're doing that, because once that slope starts being slid down, there's no stopping it. There'll be no stopping.
Understood.
Hey, Neil, I appreciate your comments. And, you know, the bottom line is I would suggest you write to your politicians. You're there in Florida. I can tell you that there's been a lot of shootings I've talked about on the air in Florida. I would write to the local politicians in Florida that are in Congress, in the Senate, and express those points of view. My thing is with these politicians, O'Neill, you're probably going to hit a stone wall. Why do I say that? Think about it. When was the last time you heard any of these politicians talking about assault rifles? It's only when something happens, they talk about it for 2 weeks, 3 weeks, gone. And
then it goes away.
And that's part of the problem. They don't want to deal with this issue.
And also, I think guns are big business.
And guns are a big business. That's a very good point.
Sure.
Guns are a big business.
Indeed.
Well, Neil, thank you so much for calling in from Florida, and we appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you, gentlemen. Right. Have a great evening.
You too.
Thank you.
Bye. Yeah, I mean, I thought that the caller brought up some very interesting points, Jamal, you know, without a doubt. But let's face it, I think that the regulation piece of this with the government getting involved, there are those who are going to argue that don't let the government get involved in these types of things because it's hands-on. How do you really control that? You know, the government trying to control all of these millions of weapons out there.
You can't have it on both ends. Some people want the government to stay out of it. Other people want the government way involved in it. Then they want to pick and choose. That becomes a serious problem.
I agree with you. Hey, but getting back to the gang situation, you know, people ask about these things with these gangs, but the reality is in many communities, they experience high rates of crime. Public safety agencies struggle to respond to gang-related crimes. I mean, that's just all really just a part of it. And we have a young and vulnerable population out there, and they're easily influenced sometimes and in the wrong direction, we may add. A lot of factors to go into that. Jamal and I are going to be talking about some of those things. The issue that comes up sometimes is people ask, well, what exactly is a gang? So let me just take a moment for that because I got my little textbook definition of some of this out there. Gangs are defined in many ways, but most definitions have similar components. A common definition of a gang is a group of three or more individuals who engage in criminal activity and identify themselves with a common name or sign. And then, generally speaking, gang members brings with it a host of negative consequences that disrupt the normal course of youth development. And I think that's always been kind of a concern, without a doubt. It includes things like skipping school, criminal activity, dropping out of school, failing to graduate. You know, some of them become teen parents, so to speak, which makes their life very difficult at such a young age. All of those kind of things really, honestly, are factors that we need to take into consideration with these things about gangs. Now, the last little point that I'm going to make here is about, I want to give you a little history about gangs, because, you know, I'm always big on giving out, you know, historical information, you know, as well, because we tend not to hear about those things or forget about those things. But let me tell you, the first street gangs were documented in England around the 1600s. So again, not new, right? It started emerging in the United States around the end of the American Revolution. And just to refresh your memory, for those of you who were sleeping in history class, that's around 1776, all right? So you can see that's a long time ago. Now, the reason why they started formulating was because of a lot of the poor European immigrants were coming here, and they had very few marketable skills. Many didn't even speak English. Gangs provided an opportunity for financial gain by committing crimes such as burglaries, robberies, and things of that nature. So that's kind of how it started manifesting itself. Now, the first place, I wonder how many of you actually know where the first place a gang was actually organized, where they call it a gang. Okay, I'm from New York, so I'll let you know. It's New York, all right? New York had its first set of gangs. Okay, so they started all of this. At any rate, eventually street gangs can now be found all over the country. And just some basic statistical information, 31,000 street gangs are active within the United States with a membership that exceeds 850,000 gang members now on a national basis. That's a lot. Now, look, I'm not going to tell you that every single gang out there that has a problem, they're all, you know, thieves, murderers, and killers. I'm not going to tell you that at all, okay? I think some of them do it just to socialize, do this, do that, et cetera. And I think, you know, I'll let Jamal address that in a moment about that. But gangs are perceived to be a big problem in inner cities. A lot of people look at that, but don't think that's it. Suburban areas, residential areas, have gangs as well. So it's not just the inner city, just to be clear. Now, I want to ask Jamal, take a moment and ask Jamal, you know, Jamal, why gangs? Why do these gangs form in your opinion?
They form for a number of reasons. To different people is different reasons, but some of the most common, it's just about the neighborhood you grew up with, you grew up in. You might grow up in a neighborhood with a group of friends, and then all of a sudden it takes one join or something might happen to you in that neighborhood. Another reason is protection. If you grow up in a certain neighborhood, man, you have the gang members around that area that might mess with you until you join that gang. And if you want them to stop messing with you, you end up joining that gang. So you won't become one of those victims in your own neighborhood.
Yeah, you know, I think that that's a very valid point. I'm reading some statistics as we're talking. It says statistics suggest that teenagers joining gangs, we know it's a serious problem. According to those statistics, teenagers between 13 and 18 make up the large percentage of the gang demographic across the country, while young adults from 19 to 24 make up almost an equal amount. So now you're talking a range of 13 years old to 24 years of age. So would a 24-year-old feel the same kind of pressure possibly that a 13-year-old would feel?
No. A 24-year-old, think by that time, if something's wrong with you mentally if you decide you want to be a gang member at 24. Like, okay. Usually, you know what I mean? You don't have a car or anything like when you're 13 years old, you know what I mean? Or you know, so there's more to you in terms of financially even. But if you're 13 years old, let's say you might come from a broken home, mom is struggling, your brothers and sisters is hungry. Well, you might start taking chances and risks to put food on the table, whether it's joining a gang and selling drugs in your neighborhood to try to put food on the table. I don't know if you know about this, but I'm going to use this as an example because he said it publicly. But I think Keyshawn Johnson, the football player, said when he was younger, Keyshawn Johnson, said when he was younger, he sold weed to try to help put food in the house. You know what I mean? So some of this is just like survival. And I think one of the biggest misunderstandings with gang members, you have different levels of gang members. You got some that are active in terms of committing crimes and stuff. You got other people who are just from that neighborhood and just affiliated with a lot of people from the, you know what I mean? So they may not be active. And some of them, honestly, are some of the nicest people you'll ever meet, ironically. But they're a victim of certain circumstances. They can't help where their parents grew up at.
Let's go back in time, because you're talking about where their parents grew. I mean, where their parents grew. That's true, because some people tend to stay in the same neighborhood, I think, is where you're going with that.
Very true.
But let me ask you a question, because here, you know, I raised two boys in the inner city, which is you and your brother, all right?
Right.
And, you know, Jamal, I can reflect back on times when you were in school, so getting ready to graduate from eighth grade, and then the situation came up with, okay, where are you going to high school? Now, as I recall, we had some serious discussions that I don't want to say they almost came to blows. It wasn't that serious, but there was some serious discussions in terms of where you were going to go for your 4 years. Now, you'd been in private school in grades 1 through 8, and now all of a sudden, you're telling us you wanted to go to, I won't mention the names, but you wanted to go to a couple of public high schools that, in my opinion, you and your mother and I were not necessarily in favor of you going to, because we have these kind of concerns.
I can't say the school?
No, okay. We don't want you to say the school.
Okay, I won't say the school. So, no, that's very true. I wanted to go to a high school that was within a few blocks of where I live. I came from a very nice neighborhood. I mean, we had, like, literally Michael Cooper lived, like, a few houses up. Mayor Bradley lived around the corner. You know what I mean? So, but private school put a lot of restriction on my personality. Let's just say that, you know? And so, and I wasn't trying to hear that at the time because, you know, I'm at home where my parents are strict. I'm at school where the nuns are strict. I felt caged in with my personality. Now, being grown and being like over 40 now, a little over 40, I understand what I needed, that structure. That structure helped me. Even though I made a lot of mistakes along the way, I was able to come back to the structure that I had in the beginning. And yes, me of all people, I definitely needed, because even being in private schools and stuff like that, I found a way to be in the streets.
Well, I think every kid finds a way and will gravitate to whatever they want. But just to let the listeners know, because you didn't really say it, I won. Your parents won the argument in terms of what school you went to, right?
Did you win it? Because you was miserable the whole time I was in high school.
You know, but well, grades is another issue, Jamal. We're not talking about grades, but at any rate,
that's true.
The I'm trying to reflect back now. I distinctly recall that you did go. I know you went to private school. But I also remember, even though you were going to private school, you were still confronted with certain issues. So it wasn't that you completely got away from it.
Right. Right. So where I went to high school, there was a public school right next door. So what would happen sometimes is there's like an Arco, there's a Bob's Big Boy on the corner. If some people hear me, they know what I'm talking about. But
The high school name is okay. That's on a positive note.
Okay.
I didn't want you to mention the other one because that would have been on a negative note.
Okay. So, yeah, I went to St. Bernard's High School, which is in Playa Del Rey, right next to Westchester High School. They're back-to-back, if you ever been there. And so what happens sometimes is we got out at different times. Every now and then, the Westchester High kids would get out early. And so the St. Bernard kids would get on the bus, and they pull in front of Westchester High where there's like 100 kids waiting for that bus. And some of the kids are like, please don't stop. Keep going. Some of the bus drivers thought it'd be funny just to let these kids on the bus anyway.
Right.
And so, you know, so some of these kids was getting robbed on the bus and beat up on the bus and things like that rolling down Manchester Boulevard. Thank God I had a little bit of size on me. Just a little bit.
Yeah, just a little bit.
So I didn't really have that problem as much as I seen other people have it. It didn't happen all the time because the Westchester kids didn't get on there all the time. But that bus keep rolling down the street. There was another public school waiting for those Westchester kids, and it would start all over again. So, I mean, those are some of the pressures that you deal with. You know, you might come from a nice neighborhood, like
View Park or Baldwin Hills or Ladera, but as soon as you walk down the street, you still have that problem to deal with, and you got to keep your head on a swivel and know where you're at all times.
Well, you know what? Let's look at some of the information, all right, that we're able to provide. It says teen gangs provide protection in the neighborhood. That's what they mean by that. And I'm going to read this because this the research we've done. Gang members are terrorists to the neighborhood, and many kids will say the negative peer pressure forced them to join the gang. They were either beat up or knew that they were going to get beat up if they didn't join the gang. They decided to join the gang to hang out with friends, learn how to protect themselves against rival gangs, and avoid getting beat up by gangs who already control their neighborhoods.
That's something that's very true. Like I said, fortunately for me, the difference between living where I live and where some of my other friends might live, they have to sleep at night there. They're there 24 hours. I go home to somewhere safe where there's no drive-bys. There's not an average gang. There's no gang members on my street where I lived at. Not that I knew of anyway. There was a couple problem kids, but that was about it. So therefore, you have some of those pressures. You know what I mean? If you don't want to... things happening to you, you might want to join for protection and security. Oh, that's so-and-so. He's cool. Don't mess with him anymore. You know what I'm saying? He's one of ours. But if you one of those people, like, you're not from our gang, well, let's go get him before his pocket change. And this is like young kids trying to prove themselves to other people, whether it be their friends or older gang members and stuff like that, because everything is in close proximity to where you live at. You know, these kids don't have, you know, they're not going out of the neighborhood. These are kids going to junior high, high school. So they would rob somebody that's not in the gang that lives in their neighborhood because they're an easy target.
What about the family relationships? Okay, let's talk about the kids in a good neighborhood, but you got family members that may live in other neighborhoods and they are gang affiliated, even though you're not gang affiliated, but those are family members. What's the dynamic with that? What's the struggle with that? Same thing?
Yes. No, not the same thing. It's a little bit different, man, because with family members, you say you can have cousins or people like that that you have family gatherings with. You love these people to death because all you do is have fun with them. You know what I mean? So you don't never see this person as a bad person because they're not a bad person to you. So therefore, it's more of an influence. I want to be like them. I want to be a part of this because this is my family and they're part of a larger family. So sometimes you get wrapped up in that. Or you get some of these, you know, some uncles or relatives that come back from the pen and like, man, he's the toughest guy I know. I want to be like him because he's tough. He could fight. He could do, you know what I mean? And as a boy, that influences us at times. You know what I mean? Because we want to be that rough and tough because that's what it's taught as a young man, to be tough like that, to be able to hold your own and some of those things. So,
well, you know, look, the statistics say many gang members join because family members are or used to be gangbangers. Sure. Sometimes kids feel a sense of pride, I think is what I hear you saying, in carrying sure. on the family legacy. This is especially true if one or more or both of their parents were high up in the gang's ranks, etc. So protecting reputations through vengeance is another way for some of these gang members as well.
I think part of the problem, too, is being gang affiliated or in a gang, it's fun until it's not fun no more. The first time that bullet goes whizzing by you, that is not a good feeling. And before then, everything was fighting, having fun, just kicking it with your friends you close to. But the first time that bullet goes whizzing by, it's not a good feeling at all. Or visiting friends in the hospital. Like, unfortunately, like I said, I went to private school. I knew a lot of people that were good people, and they was hit, victims of gang violence. And they had nothing to do with gangs.
You know, one thing I want the audience to understand also is that it's important to understand not all gang members come from broken homes. Because sometimes you'll hear that. You'll hear, there's only one parent in a home and this and that, this and that. It's not true, okay? It's not just a broken home situation. And one of the other notes is that an overwhelming majority of the kids will say that at some point it feels good to be accepted or to belong to the gang, because a gang provides secondary family for some kids who feel neglected and unloved. There's that word love.
I think that's very true. So you take a kid that he's lonely. Maybe dad is locked up, mom is on drugs or struggling. You have no direction. No direction. You're not being put in any sports. You're just wandering around the streets idly. You know what I mean? So you want to feel a part of something, and unfortunately, they become a part of something negative. You know, and it might seem like I'm going on both sides. It's just, you know, because there are some people that I know that are active gang members that are really good people, and then there's other people that do bad things, and bad things happen. But it's just so big, the spectrum of why people join is just huge. You know, whether it be family pressures or peer pressures, or just like I said earlier, victim of the neighborhood your parents lived in. There's some bad situations, like let's just say you grew up in the Crip neighborhood. You come home one day, mom and dad, hey, guess what? We're moving to a blood neighborhood.
Right.
You got a problem on your hands.
Yeah, he mentioned Crips, you guys. Just to let your listeners know that two of the main gangs, and I want to say this, I would say it's more toward the African-American community, right?
True.
Are the Crips and the Bloods. Because we have, you know, so they are major gangs in the Los Angeles area, and now nationally, quite frankly. Now, we also have other types of gangs from other nationalities, so we're not just putting it on the African-American community, because they do have Hispanic gangs, and they also have Asian gangs as well. And I'm sure there's other ones out there, but I'm not going to try and go through a whole long list of that at the moment. But, Jamal, one other thing I want to mention is that this business about school, because a lot of times what we hear about the schools is this business about bullying. Because to me, when they're trying to peer pressure and trying to put people in gangs or getting you to join gangs, isn't there a certain aspect of that when we get back to this word bullying again?
There are some pressures. I've never experienced that kind of pressure directly. Like I said, that was one of the advantages of going to a private school. I've seen, you know, people who were like active gang members or supposed active gang members or affiliated going to a private school or said they was in a gang, you know what I mean? But it was never that kind of pressure of anybody being forced to be on a gang at a private school. I did see one incident, unfortunately, that happened like that. And that person's never been the same since, to be honest with you. And it was a good friend of mine at one point, but he got kind of forced and bullied into a gang, if you ask me, because they never really treated him right, but they made him part of their crew. And unfortunately, he's not the same mentally. So, I mean, it does happen wherever you go. I mean, even being in private school, you're sheltered. The percentages is not as high. But I could for sure tell you I've seen guns in school, in classrooms. I actually seen a kid actually loading up a gun in classroom while the teacher was asking him a question. You know what I mean? So private school is not completely, but the percentage is a lot lower. That's not the norm at a private school. You know what I mean? That's just something that I did happen to see.
Well, let me ask you a question. Do you have any idea on we didn't talk about this, but do you have any idea about where the most gangs are, the five worst cities in this country for gangs?
Five worst cities?
Uh-huh.
Oh, man, Los Angeles got to be top of the charts, man. It has to be.
Believe it or not, it's not.
It's not even the top five?
Uh-uh. I'll tell you number five, New Orleans, Louisiana.
I could believe that.
Now, you got roots in Louisiana.
Yes, I do.
New Orleans is listed as number five, okay? Wow. And they say the city has always had a problem with gangs, as its location has long been made in transit to stop criminal activity or something. Hurricane Katrina, New Orleans gang activity has risen tenfold since then. So here we go. People in a situation,
wow,
okay, that's dictating, you know, what it is or what it's like to move forward. So it's considered one of the most gang-infested cities in America. Number four on the list, Detroit.
I could believe
Detroit,
that.
Michigan. Here we go again. What's the situation in Detroit? It's not a healthy situation.
The only thing I'm not sure about, I don't know how those gangs work. Like, are the gangs, because I think, like, Detroit in some areas are, like, blocks. You know what I mean? I know some, like, Chicago might have, like, you know, their different gangs and stuff like that, even with blocks. I don't know how that works in other cities and other states and stuff like that.
Whether or not it's just a block situation or a whole area.
Right.
Okay. I could get with that.
Yeah.
Number three on the list, Jamal? East St. Louis, Illinois.
Mm.
East St. Louis, Illinois. Now, to be honest with you, I never knew there was an East St. Louis, Illinois.
Right.
East St. Louis. How do you have St. Louis in Illinois? But it's called East St. Louis in Illinois.
Okay. That threw me off.
And it's located, the reason that is, it says it's located just across the Missouri state line in Illinois. So that's why. So it's St. Louis. So it spills over into the next state.
Right.
It apparently is what it is. And it's become one of the most gang-infested cities in America in recent years. Its murder rate is 17 times the national average, and there seems to be no stopping the progression of gangs in this region. East St. Louis is a perfect area for gangs to build. It's located right near a major city, which is St. Louis, yet its police force represents that of a small town, so it's very easy to avoid detection. So, East St. Louis, Illinois. Next one, Camden, New Jersey. Now, I know you don't know anything about Camden, New Jersey.
Not at all.
Right. But they said ever since the blood-affiliated sex money murder, it's called blood-affiliated.
Oh, I've heard of them.
Okay, yes. That's who it is. Murder sent took over New Jersey in the late 1980s. Camden has been at the center of gang activity. It says also in Camden, the police force has shrunk by over 50% over the past 5 years, while gang membership has simultaneously risen. Okay, sex money, murder faction, the Latin Kings and MS-13 are also active gangs in the region. Now, we know we've done a show on MS-13. I've got the 10 worst gangs in the country listed as well, and I'll run those down in the last couple of minutes that we have. But number one on the hit parade, what do you think? If it's not Los Angeles, it's not, where else you think?
Chicago.
Number one is Chicago.
Yeah, they got something different going on down there.
Chicago, that's exactly right. My other son, Jermaine, is in Chicago right now. He's out there doing some coaching right now. So that's one of the things I told him before he even goes out there. Be careful because there's so much going on in Chicago right now. You need to be, you know, need to be very, very careful about where you are. But those are the most, those are the five most gang-infested cities in America. So I was kind of amazed, to be perfectly honest with you, that Los Angeles was not on the top, was not in the top five. I'm not sure where they fit. I might do a little bit more research because now I'm really curious. But now, let me just tell you, we're going to run down the top most lethal gangs in America.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah, go ahead.
Because Los Angeles is not in the top five, because I remember at one point there was a murder capital of the country. Does that mean Los Angeles is getting better?
Well, murder capital is one thing. Murder by who is another thing. Because we're talking about gangs.
Right.
All right? So we can't hold the gangs responsible for all of the murders that have taken place. They may have been a murder capital.
Right.
But that doesn't mean that all of that was gang-related.
Right. Okay.
All right? So just to be clear, MS-13. All right? MS-13. Most people know it. They don't know by its real name. Its real name is Mara, M-A-R-A, Salvatucha. Yeah. All right? And that's what the MS stands for. And it's known to have about 10,000 members. All right. They're in 40 cities around the United States. So MS-13 is considered one of the most lethal gangs in America. All right. Then the next one is called, I got to put my glasses on, guys. Sorry about that. Hold on a second. That's that over the 40 thing. Oh, that's right. Barrio 18. Barrio 18. The 18th Street gang goes by the other nicknames like Barrio 18 or the M18. It's a huge youth gang in the United States. Central American, you guys, by the way. Next one on the list is the Aryan Brotherhood. And I think that we hear a lot about the Aryan Brotherhood, white supremacy. So we hear about them. We don't normally think about them like in gangs, but that's what it is. All right. So the Aryan Brotherhood. Next one, Mongols, M-O-N-G-O-L-S-M-C. That, the son of Anakar on cable, the popular show, because that has to do with, MC means motorcycle club. All right, now all motorcycle clubs out there are not bad. So just to be clear, all right. Next one on there, Chicago Splinter Gang. So they've got gangs all over Chicago. Rahm Emanuel out there can't seem to get a handle on the crisis. I know that at one point the government was even talking about intervening out there. Next, number four, the Bloods. The Bloods, the Notorious Bloods gang, started off in the 1960s in Los Angeles. And they know about the Bloods. So the Bloods is one of the top ones that are out there. All right. So, Jamal, that one goes back to the L.A. It started in the L.A. area. Next one was the Mexican Mafia. Next one is the Rolling 60 Crips. I know you know about the Rolling 60. You know, that's Los Angeles-based also.
What makes you think I know about?
Nah, well, we just had a lot of conversations about the Crips and the Bloods. That's what they are. You know. And then the last one, guys, number one, Number one, the Trinitarios. Trinitarios. And most of the jail gangs already, you know, that are out there in western and southern states, they're a gang that was formed in New York City, guys. And they were comprised mostly of Dominican immigrants, and they became officially active in 1989, and now they are the number one most lethal gang in America. And those are names you don't hear all the time with some of those. But anyway, well, Jamal, I want to thank you for coming out today. I appreciate your time, you know, today.
Thank you for having me.
That's not a problem. All right, you've been listening to Jim Potts on LA Talk Radio. It's time to close out the show, but be sure to join me next week. And do me a favor. If you like what you heard, spread the word. Hey, also, don't forget to get that book, Domestic Terrorism Safety Tips. It's on Amazon. It's very inexpensive. Go get it. It's been selling like hotcakes, so you may have to wait a little bit, but get on there and get your order in there. All right? Hey, until next week, we want you to be aware. We want you to be vigilant, be safe. More importantly, be a reluctant victim. Until next week, guys.
You're listening to Listen Up with Jim Potts, only on LA Talk Radio.